You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are here with another edition of the M Squared TechCast. We are moving into our fourth year now, do you believe
that? Yeah, it's always exciting in the studio,
yes,
too.
Yes, it is.
So
yeah,
for those of you who've been listening to Dead Air for the last 15 minutes.
That would be because of some minor technical difficulties that have been solved by our excellent staff here at Podcast.
Excellent staff, yes.
That's right.
Okay.
All right, but our first guest today is a longtime friend of the show, Tem Brochet, Director of Inforum's Engage Program for Second Stage Women Entrepreneurs, and she has a guest today who's also been with us before, so that's kind of neat. I think that might be the first time, Timber, that that's happened. You've got a repeat guest.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
I think so.
But that's because she's got such a great story to tell, right?
That's
so
it.
Take it away, Timber.
It's a spellbinding story.
Yes. And it'll be augmented, I think,
yeah,
too.
Yes.
With a little reality, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yes, thank you for having me, you guys. And by the way, congratulations on your anniversary. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do we get rings or tattoos? Twos or anything?
What is the fourth anniversary? I'm going to look that up.
Oh, what is that?
Okay. Work on that. So Christina York, yes, has been with us before. So she is the founder and CEO of Spellbound AR for augmented reality, as we were evading to a moment ago. Christina was in Engage Masterclass with us in 2016 and has done amazing things since. So her product, actually, it's a therapeutic tool. Helps children cope and engage with medical treatment. They use immersive augmented reality technology, and they're actually used by pediatric specialists specifically to improve procedural compliance, reduce trauma for their patients, and they do that through smartphones and tablets. So they create this interactive 3D experience on top of printed cards and books and really great stuff they're doing. So I know in the 2 years since she's been in Masterclass, they now have 21 customers throughout the country doing amazing things. And they have a brand new patent, which is why I brought Christina back in. That, and she has another little fun thing to share. But let's talk about the patent. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you so much, Timber. Thank you, Matt and Mike. So thanks for the great introduction about Spellbound. And we've been so excited about just hospitals willing to adopt this new technology and take a chance. So we've got some great top hospitals that have really been helping us develop it. So if you think about children who might have to undergo a needle-related medical procedure, whether it's a simple blood draw or if they're an oncology patient, chemo port accesses, managing the pain during those simple procedures isn't very common. But hospitals are realizing more and more that how important it is to do those type of things, not only for patient experience, but to better engage kids long-term with their healthcare as they grow up. And so when we started doing our augmented reality, we really spent a lot of time thinking about how hospitals use technology, and that's why we chose mobile devices. And there's just a lot of opportunity in augmented reality right now. And so when we first started developing our technology, we filed a few patents, more so as an early stage startup to think about how do we protect ourselves from some of those big guys out there that we don't want to get blocked out. And not really intending a strategy around filing patents and, you know, making money off of patents. But the idea was, you know, let's protect what we're doing for hospitals, what we're doing for kids in hospitals. And this summer we were awarded an augmented reality patent for what's called progressive or interactive augmented reality, the card systems that we use. The idea is you point your mobile device at a card, book, or as you mentioned, like wall decal. It does. The camera on the device does image and text recognition. It knows what it's looking at, and it presents the appropriate 3D interactive experience. And what's important is as we add different cards or books or elements there, it becomes intelligent, augmented reality, in terms of it knows how to layer those things on top of one another and create a richer experience for the patient given the context they're in. So the difference between, a patient who is diabetic and has a lot of needle sticks versus an oncology patient who has different types of needle sticks, thinking about how you could enrich their experiences in the context of their own condition. So really, an important patent, but also a win for the entrepreneurial system, especially Michigan, when the big patent holders, you think of the big companies that are filing patents in augmented reality right now and winning them, Microsoft with hundreds and hundreds of patents in augmented reality, and Google, and even Facebook, Samsung, Sony. These are the companies that are filing these patents and being awarded these patents in this emerging technology space. So for us, a Michigan-based company, to be awarded a really important patent is a big deal for us.
So will this be something that other companies might pay you to use since you have this patent?
It is possible. I think, right now we've got the patent. We've got because it was unexpected, we're looking at shoring it up. Like, how do we further protect this or be more, specific, expanded in ways that help our business and protect our technology? But, you have to keep that in the back of your mind. Our strategy wasn't IP-based, but if people start coming to us and saying, hey, we have these card systems that we want to do augmented reality with, we need to license your technology, we're open to that possibility. Though as a startup, it's difficult to stay focused on your market.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of these amazing healthcare systems across the country who've decided that this was important and are partnering with you and are using your technology today?
Yeah. Well, here in Michigan, University of Michigan and Beaumont, great users of the technology. University of Michigan was the very first. Beaumont's one of our power users. They're a fantastic group. The Child Life group there at Beaumont is fantastic. Stanford, New York Presbyterian, one of our favorite hospitals in Texas, Providence Children's. We have hospitals all over the country using Spellbound.
It's amazing stuff. So you actually sent me a text message this morning. It's good to stay in touch. But this is really some very interesting news too. Tell me about the text message you sent this morning.
The best of the Midwest.
What is it, and how'd you get involved? What's going to come out? What could come out of this?
So the Best of the Midwest is with the Angel, what's the ACA?
Angel Capital Association.
They have an annual conference. And the Best of the Midwest is either venture capitalist or angel has to nominate a startup. And they create a short list of startups and then goes through some sort of vetting system with judges. And then they invite 10 of what they feel are the best startups in the Midwest to come to that conference and present and get funded.
Really. Is this in Chicago where they do this?
I know if it's been in Chicago in the past. This year it's in Des Moines. Being held in, yes, we're going out to Des Moines, Iowa.
What?
I do believe it's been affiliated with Chicago in the past.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Des Moines. Well, yeah. Somehow I just don't think Angel Capital of Des Moines,
Midwest
I'm going to get calls on that, right? So.
The Midwest is kind of, I think, a fast-growing area for angel and early-stage investment in the country because they're filling a much-needed gap for the entrepreneurial ecosystem where it might be more difficult, more dense on the coasts.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely. Steve Case was here last year with Rise of the Rest, which is a very big,
did a nice video interview with him.
Yeah, fantastic.
And Mike, I do have to tell you, I just did a web search for Des Moines Tech Hub, and I got this website that has as an intro, "Welcome to Silicon Prairie." So apparently they are marketing themselves as a tech hub.
They've got ag tech?
It's data centers.
No kidding. Hmm. Yeah. Well, I suppose you're right in the middle of everything, right?
Yeah, right. And there's no hurricanes. There's no earthquakes.
Right, tornado. Maybe, like Dorothy goes by in a rowboat or something. Right. But other than that, Sorry, we're stepping all over
here. We're digressing. Yes, okay.
Yes. No worries. Good to know.
All right.
So yes. You will be in a tech hub.
Yeah. So Spellbound was one of the companies that was invited to go. So next week we will be at that conference and representing Michigan and very proud to be able to, meet other Midwest companies and investors.
You could wear a shirt that have U of M on one side, MSU on the other or something, that way.
No. I think I'll want to reduce controversy and increase funding levels.
Exactly. So how does this work? Are you going to be pitching and then do you get investment?
Yeah, the idea is that they create a fund of the investors that are attending the conference. And the companies pitch over the 2 days of the conference, and we get to attend workshops and conferences, other talks at the conference to learn and make connections and network. And
they pick up your expenses?
They do. They were very kind and
that's a good part, right?
Paying for accommodations. Yeah. And yeah, it was great. So we get this chance not only to take, you know, I think they said between five, at least 50% of the companies will be funded, 5 to 10, depending on how many attendees are at the conference.
And what sort of, just your typical angel level 250-ish kind of thing? Or do they give you a number or what?
I think the minimum might be around 100,000, but it's not, I don't
grand,
think
know?
There's any.
Go to the Bahamas, have a good time.
That's exactly what startups do.
So that's fantastic.
Not so good right now with like four hurricanes lined up.
Yeah.
No. So that's exciting. Very exciting. Do you know if you're the only company from Michigan that's going to be there?
The companies haven't officially been announced. Okay. Actually, you guys are breaking the news. I've probably broken some contract.
No. When news breaks here, it stays broken.
So you've grown a lot.
Yes.
How many employees do you have now?
We have 4 full-time employees, a handful of part-time folks, and actually a bunch of contractors from around the country. I'm sorry, around the state. Mm-hmm. We have an intern right now from Baker College, in fact.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, we like to try to bring in interns from different animation or illustration or arts, but as well as computer science and particularly programs that focus in gaming and game development.
Right. Wow, I think I know a school that does that, right, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. I got to talk to Mars Ashton about that. He's our director of game development and game art at LTU.
Yeah.
So, are you hiring right now? Are you looking right now, or are you staffed up fully right now?
We are looking to close this seed round, and then we will be hiring.
Okay.
And so looking for folks in marketing and business development, as well as in game development and 3D modeling and animation.
How big is your seed round? What are you looking for?
We're looking for a minimum of $500,000.
Well,
we'll max out about $750,000.
Uh-huh.
It's for a tech company, it's a pretty small seed round, but we have been doing well with our revenue and acquiring customers. So
sounds like you've got actual revenue, actual customers, which is helpful. So
yes. We don't mind that part at all.
Yeah,
so,
right. Exactly.
You know, we've been around since the beginning of 2016, so we put this off for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 minutes to go. So
2 minutes to go. That's awesome. So potentially, this contest could help you get to where you need to be.
Yeah,
for
it could
your seed
wrap
round.
It up. By next week, we could be all done with our seed round. That would be fantastic.
Then go to the Bahamas, right?
Yeah.
Just what we all do.
Or what's left of it after
the
hurricane.
Yeah, right. There'll be some good property available.
Okay.
We do augmented reality. I can make the Bahamas anytime I want.
I like that.
You know, that's absolutely correct. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, good point.
So we have a minute left. So if people want more information about Spellbound, how do they find you?
Our website is spellboundar.com. Mm-hmm. We've got information there. And, you know, if you know somebody working in a hospital, especially working with kids, and you want to spread the word that there's this new technology that really helps patients and families not only cope with pain, but improve their education around diseases and conditions.
Are you in Spectrum Health up in Grand Rapids yet?
No.
Oh, I know a lot
You're
of people
on our
up there.
List.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll Timber, put in a word for you.
Okay. Timber Shea, also, before we leave here, give us the elevator pitch and contact info for the Engage program.
Absolutely. So, this program with emerging second stage female entrepreneurs has had 101 women participate. They've started 42 brand new companies. They've created 395 jobs, been granted 36 patents, of which Christina has a brand new one. Generated $52.2 million in follow-on funding and have $13 million in government contracts. So if you're interested, the next cohort will be starting up early 2019. And you can do that at www.inforum.org.
All right. Thanks very much, Timber Shea, Director of Inforum's Engage Program, and Christina York from Spellbound. Great stuff. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're indeed listening to the M-Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary.
In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back indeed with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. We're going to talk about cars.
Yep.
That's certainly something we love to talk about here in Detroit. And
we
this
do.
Is a unique approach.
Yep. And we have with us Michael McInerney. I like Irish names, you know.
Yeah, Mike Brennan. You're the only Mike Brennan I've ever met.
Yeah, right. You know, there's like three or four in town. Everybody goes, I always get the Oakland University people contacting me going, oh, I want to talk to you about an investment. And I go, that's great, but I think you got the wrong guy.
Wrong Mike Brennan?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, you're with Deliver My Ride.
That's right.
A platform where customers can anonymously shop live dealer inventories and compare side by side and much more, right?
Much more, yeah. In fact, having come from the car business and a kind of a legacy from that standpoint, my father and uncles and cousins and brothers are all in the car business and have been since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was myself, in fact, up until about 10 or 12 years ago. So having worked in the car business and knowing, the challenges that come with the car business on a retail perspective, you know, there's a lot of challenges there. And from a sales standpoint, you know, it's an objective for us is to sell cars. So with the rise of technology over the last 15 years, and the car business has been a little bit reluctant to change their ways.
Reluctant, yes, that would be a good word. Hidebound would be another,
I will say that the progressive minded dealers are looking at digital retail solutions like this,
mm-hmm.
In ways to get in front of the current modern buyer.
Yeah. So tell us a bit more about this. Now, when I read about this originally, I was thinking one of your competitors is probably Carvana or not?
Well, Carvana is a used car platform.
Mm-hmm.
They buy and sell their own inventory.
Okay. Kind of like, go ahead.
And the big difference there is that we sell dealer inventory.
Oh, so this is new car.
That's correct.
And
we're new cars, so you can buy or lease a new car.
Mm-hmm.
We are a platform to facilitate that transaction,
mm-hmm.
But we're selling dealership inventory.
Mm.
So what we're doing is we've taken the cool thing that we've done is we've taken all this different big data that was meant for other purposes and repurposed it for ours. So some of the data is for OEMs to use for their own purposes, for dealership websites to use for their own purposes and others. And we've mapped and pulled all this stuff together so that we could normalize vehicle equipment features so that customers can essentially compare multiple brands side by side without having to know, you know, what the trim level package means and what, a certain marketing technical term is for a backup camera or for different types of features. So you can really compare multiple cars side by side and get an idea of what you want without having to go dealership to dealership, brand to brand, shopping everything that, has been the traditional way.
Can you, for instance, pick a Camaro and say you want to look at the Camaro fitted out the same way at several Chevy dealers? Is that one of the possibilities?
Sure,
there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because then you can see who gives you the best price.
That's
kind
correct.
Of thing?
Yep. Now, here in town, it's a little unique because most people are either employed by or affiliated with the
car connection
the domestic
stuff.
Car brands.
Right.
So As a national product, we believe that as we scale this, that will become more apparent, where you've got one Camaro dealership or Chevy dealership competing with another. And really, it pricing from dealer to dealer from that perspective is driven by their inventory levels and their sales goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we make it conscientiously. We choose dealers. We don't have every single dealer in town, but we'll have dealers in different parts of metro area, so that one might be really heavy in pickup truck sales,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Sure.
And another might be loaded up with Corvettes.
Mm-hmm.
So that in the Corvette dealership is more aggressive on their pricing for Corvettes than the truck dealer is more aggressive with pricing in their trucks, just because they have that inventory turn challenge.
Yeah. I'm as Matt knows, I've had Millie on the show a couple of times. I'm affiliated with the group that's doing conquest marketing sales.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've had multiple meetings with GM hierarchy and different, you know, Ford and whatnot. The thing that sort of struck me was they tell us that in this market, that 2/3 or 3/4 of the vehicles are leased versus the rest of the country, maybe 25%.
That's right.
Is that what you're running into,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, in the Detroit market, about 80% of new car transactions are leases.
Wow.
Around the country, it's about 30%.
Yeah, I guess the numbers are holding up then.
Yeah, so we have a little bit of a different approach here in Detroit, which is where we're launching this product.
Right.
And once we get the bugs out and we figure out a few things, then we'll take it to market 2, 3, 4, up to 80 around the country. So, but, you know, from a pricing perspective, from a lease calculation perspective, you know, there's every manufacturer, every dealership has 3 or 4 banks that they use for mm-hmm. financing.
Or not to mention, like, GM has their own internal, Ford has their own internal, you know.
Right. So really filtering through all that stuff is difficult. We pull all that data in and expose it so the customer can consume it in the way that they want to.
Uh-huh.
Again, the same with different vehicles and features. You know, there's, I think GM, for example, has over 1 million configurations for their vehicles.
Total vehicles.
Total.
Right. Yeah, so, I was going to say.
You know, color, interior, exterior, equipment,
mm-hmm.
you know, make, model, trim. So, you know, it's very difficult for a consumer to really sift through all that data.
Mm-hmm.
So we make it easy.
Yeah.
And in fact, we've built our site to replicate the way I sold cars.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a lot of sites out there today, they're really their main purpose is to gather a customer's lead data information and mm-hmm. sell that lead to multiple people.
Yeah.
And that's good for the people who are buying the customer's lead, but it really doesn't serve the customer much.
Well, I'm also seeing a lot of data that shows that people shop online extensively because they hate going to dealerships because then they get the full court press. So I'm working with a couple of local dealers, I mean, I can't even get out of my car before they're on me, right? You know, that for me, that's a little off-putting. You know?
Right. And what product and service do you buy today other than a car that you have to go through that process?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist.
No, very aggressive.
So that's why we're trying to bring this this way of buying a car into the modern age. And quite frankly, you know, the ability for a dealer to retain salespeople mm-hmm. today, to hire and retain.
That's the other issue, yeah.
The millennial does not want to sell cars.
No.
And so, you know, solutions like ours, this digital retailing, if you will,
right.
Is becoming more and more popular. Dealers are finding companies that will let them plug right into their own website
mm-hmm.
this process. We sit on the outside and we aggregate all brands.
So you plug right in the DMS.
We do. That's how we gather our data. We pull information from the dealer's DMS, and then when a customer buys a car, we push the data back through.
The other issue we ran into was they would have one list in the dealer management system and another in the customer relationship manager system, and then we'd be haggling over, did we, you know, they would claim, no, you didn't bring those in, we brought those in, and, you know, we had to get them to merge their lists so we could have, you know, more transparency. Do you run into that too?
Well, we don't, because we control the relationship all the way through.
Oh, okay.
So we know when a customer...
You know, so there's no arguing with the dealer that you didn't bring it to
them,
right?
Okay. No, not at all. And you know, that is the challenge with lead gen companies. Right. TrueCar, for example, that's the way they have their process set up.
Cars.com does it the same way.
And they write off 30% of their supposed transactions because mm-hmm. of that argument.
Sure. Interesting. Ooh. And is it the website deliveryride.com?
That's correct.
Okay. I'll get that out there. Matt, I've been monopolizing the conversation. I'm sure you have questions.
Oh, that's all right. So how did you get the idea for this? Where did this concept come from?
Well, it came when I had been out of the car business for a few years, and I became a consumer, which was a sad day for me. Mm. I used to drive, demo cars from the dealership, but my daughter turned 16, mm-hmm. and I became a consumer. And at that stage, I still have relationship, obviously, in town to buy a car, mm-hmm. but I wanted to do some research, and really just about every site that I went to was a lead, or it was a listing of the dealers down the street. And I really wanted to find out, what are the real numbers and deals. And when I couldn't find them, I got a couple of smart people together and we figured out a way to begin this process of bringing it online.
Mm-hmm. I believe Pete Carmanas Jr. is hanging around with you guys, right?
He is. He's been a great partner, both from a technology side and a funding side. And at the ripe young age of 74, 75, he's still in it. And
because this is kind of a leap for him. He's an old mainframe guy, right? And then suddenly he's in cars.
Well, he's in cars. He's in mortgages. He's in energy. He's in all kinds of stuff
now. Hockey,
still in hockey.
Yeah. Wow, still in hockey. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but he's been a great partner for us, and I knew that I needed somebody who could help me take this idea and really develop it, and he's been a perfect partner for us.
How'd you find him?
Mutual friend was introduced, and I really not walked in the door, and they started telling me about what Mad Dog Technology does. That's my partner in Pete's company, and they said they go to large vertical industries and whatever $1 billion opportunity, and that's what they look at now because they're big grown up guys. And I said, well, that idea just walked through the front door, and I told them what I was doing, and
so
they liked it.
Are you based out of the co-working space in Pontiac?
We are.
Way up high.
That's correct.
I know I visited there about a year or two ago. Because when you said Mad Dog, that sort of set off my little – I had to send the messengers back into my memory there. But I know I dealt with somebody there called Mad Dog.
Yep. So. We've got a couple few companies up there in Pontiac now, and it's a great working space for tech people to come to. We're in the center of Oakland County, so – those people who don't want to drive all the way downtown Detroit, we can bring right to Pontiac.
Yeah, great. Hmm. So how you guys have been doing this for how long?
About 2.5 years.
Really?
Yep.
Because I didn't hear about it until you sent out your press release about a month ago. So you're flying under the radar there.
We are. We want to get the bugs worked out. We did some early marketing, trying to test the waters and see where the customers' heads were at and where the dealers were at, because I really have two sides of this. I've got to attract consumers and I have to attract dealers.
Sure.
So we learned a lot in the first year and a half. Then we started to develop everything as an automated platform, and that's where we are today. And about 5 weeks ago, we launched that.
Yeah. Well, that's probably the reason for the press release
that
I saw. So we got about 1 minute left. So let's go over this one more time. I know it's delivermyride.com, and people are going to go there. And what are they going to be able to do?
They're going to be able to shop for a car. They're going to be able to calculate their own finance, see actual inventory on our site, compare multiple brands. And if they push the buy button, they'll go right through a online credit application and then determine if they want the car the next day, 2 days down the road. It is it's a bypass of the dealership process.
And I know a lot of people, particularly in this market, they're a little strained on their credit ratings and things like that. Do you also help folks with may not have a big downstroke and a poor credit rating? Is that part of the deal?
That whole part of the transaction is done at the dealership, outside of the dealership actually, but the credit application is sent to the dealership and they handle the financing because they have the relationships with the banks. And they know how to get all that stuff done.
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
All right. So that's Michael McInerney. Yeah, I can do it. Michael McInerney.
The Irish have to stick together. You got to learn that name.
I was going to have that beer to try one of Dave's beer. Lucky I didn't, right?
Yeah.
And he's the president, I believe.
I am.
President of Deliver My Ride up in Pontiac. And it sounds like an interesting endeavor. And we wish you well with that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much, Michael McInerney from Deliver My Ride.
So you can do it.
We'll be right back with another segment. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast right here at PodcastDetroit.com. We've got a guest now who's going to talk to us about car hacking and car security.
Yep.
As more and more vehicle functions become automated, like adaptable cruise control, let's say, and lane departure warning systems, that stuff is hooked into the car. The car is increasingly hooked into the internet. What does all that mean, and how do we keep it safe and secure? And that's what Trillium Secure is all about. They're a California company that's established a presence in Ann Arbor. And so we've got Zoran Kaler. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, sir.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, right on the first guess. Well, welcome to the show.
You're lucky that I wasn't trying to pronounce it. I have a reputation for butchering names.
Yes.
So,
and I sew them back together.
I am easy. People make a mistake 50% of the time, so I'm okay. You did perfect.
Okay, great. So let's talk about vehicle security and what Trillium Secure is doing to keep cars from being hacked.
So what you have to keep in mind is that the vehicles today are becoming all about data. So it's not just important to, you know, make sure that somebody is, you know, prohibited or disabled from hacking into your vehicle. It's also about making sure that the data that you generate in your vehicle and the data that the vehicle is using, especially if it's an autonomous vehicle, stays protected over its life cycle, right? So the vehicle generates the data about the usage. Your phone data gets transferred to the entertainment stack in the vehicle. All of that together has an intrinsic value to you as a person, but also the data from the vehicle has a value for the car manufacturer, for your insurance company, et cetera, et cetera. So making sure that that data is safe and secure from the moment it's being generated to the moment it is retired or terminated, that is very important. So the way we approach that, we say, okay, we secure the data from its inception all through its life cycle, and we also raise the cybersecurity barrier for your vehicle.
And you formed a long-term relationship with M-City at the University of Michigan, which is a basic connected and autonomous vehicle research facility. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
It is one of the public-private partnerships that we participate in extensively, right? I mean, in Michigan, in Southeast Michigan specifically, we are highly engaged with Michigan's automotive industry and that ecosystem. But then on the other hand, we realize that organizations such as M-City and the University of Michigan are creating this pool of very talented people that the industry needs. And then obviously, on the other hand, we have a specific need, and that is to help us improve our product. So that is the relationship we have with the M-City. We enable the students, right, to participate in our programs, to get educated on technology, and in turn, we develop and improve our products.
And then I suppose once the students graduate, they have an opportunity or might have an opportunity to work for you guys, right?
That is the whole idea, Mike. You know, there is a shortage of talent in this specific space. And, you know, I can tell you that exists worldwide. You know, in Michigan, Michigan has been lucky to have several of the organizations, educational organizations, such as University of Maryland, of Michigan, who supply those people. So literally, you know, let me kind of visualize that for you. The moment they're out, you know, we have desks ready for them. We actually have just one, I believe, one of the students from one of the Michigan educational organizations finishing now in September. In October, he's becoming one of our employees, and we are extending that partnerships, you know, really statewide.
Yeah, and then I know Michigan State has the Canvas program, I believe, which is similar to M-City, and in that the students are actively working to develop these technologies for these connected vehicles, right?
Absolutely. You want to seed the pipeline, so to speak, for the talent. But then on the other hand, you want to guide these young men and women towards specific skills. And, you know, it goes anywhere from specific programs within the university to actually inviting, you know, kids as young as, middle school and high school age to participate in technical programs and competition, everything from robotic, clubs to hacking contests. You know, there's the Cyber Truck Challenge, there's the Cyber Author Challenge, all organized within the state of Michigan. And we are very close to those and participating sometimes with young people on our team as well.
All right. So tell us a little bit about how your automotive security works. I know a lot of times when people think about security, they think about sort of a static penetration test condition. But you're of the opinion that security has to have context awareness and adaptability. So talk a little bit about that, if you could.
I certainly would. You know, a lot of the technology we see coming into the specific automotive cybersecurity space, it really goes back to enterprise security and, you know, some of the very legacy techniques developed over there. And, you know, this would be the equivalent of you assuming your laptop of a certain brand can continue to be protected, right, from the moment you had the Windows 95 installed on it. And, you know, we are now 23, 24 years later, right? You have Windows 10. And the hacking universe is significantly different, right? It cannot be protected in a similar manner. We are simply saying, listen, the vehicle is a dynamic system. The hacking universe is a very dynamic system. The cybersecurity applied to the data and vehicle protections has to live and get updated over time. And we cannot expect the OEM to be the only stakeholder in those updates, or even worse, once the vehicle is out of its warranty or, you know, it has terminated the lease and it is sold on a secondary market, you can rarely expect the new owner to continue doing that, right, on his own. So we are saying do not expect people to just bring the vehicles to the service shop, or do not expect an OEM to be involved really in recoding everything, because what those static-based solutions depend on is really a thorough update of all the systems. We are saying your vehicle is connected. Let the connection take care of the updates, and those will be controlled by the OEM or the entity such as a leasing company or insurance or whatever who has interest in the vehicle. Nevertheless, it has to live with the vehicle throughout its life cycle.
Interesting. How do you think you compare? There's a number of other players in this space out there, without naming names. How do you think you compare to them?
One basic difference is that we did not approach cybersecurity for vehicles as a let's protect, you know, the vehicle with a wall. Let's not seal anything. That's number one. Number two is we saw that the vehicle generates data, and that data is part of your life or is part of a business mission if the vehicle is part of a fleet. So end point for us is a duality of the vehicle as well as the data. It is a very significant difference. And the other difference is this life cycle focus on the data and the vehicle itself. And obviously, you know, the other significant change or differentiator that we have is that we are in this for the long run, right? We plan to develop the company into a major player in this space. Our horizon is not compressed to guide us just towards an exit and be acquired by a large manufacturer. Now, we believe that the subscription-based cybersecurity that we provide is something that can make us into a long-term player in this space, right? Just like you're used to seeing McAfee or Symantec, or there are even companies offering subscription-based enterprise security. That is what we are going to do. And, you know, we know how to get there.
So tell me a little bit about the origins of Trillium. Who founded the company and when, and what was the original goal?
The company was actually founded in Japan. Our founder, one of the two founders, David Ooze, has been an executive with a number of semiconductor companies in Asia. And in 2010, 2011, an opportunity arose to focus on a very specific issue related to extremely low footprint and low cost edge of the network sensors, right? So imagine a device that is really a very small IoT device with basic connectivity. It only costs probably a few dollars. It has enough battery to work just for a few months. But the mission that it supplies, that it's part of, it's very critical. So at that point, there was no embedded software solution for anything like that. And, you know, you probably heard the horror stories of cameras and, fax machines and printers and whatever being used as the points in, bot and hack attacks. So there was no solution that would work in a space like that. So David saw that as a challenge, right, not as a barrier. And he created a small skunkworks team of three engineers that were working on this specifically. Really have developed a solution that enabled encryption and enhanced authentication for those small devices, right? So not only it can encrypt those devices and the software for them that we developed could encrypt the traffic in and out of the device, but it can also make sure that when you receive it, it's actually coming from the device that says it is your device. So that was kind of step number one. And very quickly, David got support from a celebrity figure. And this is all happening in Japan. So Japan is the location. Celebrity figure in Japanese entrepreneurial world and IPO world. So Dr. Sachio Semoto, who got his claim to fame by founding KDDI. Imagine, for example, when Sprint started challenging the big baby bell companies here in the States. Well, KDDI was the equivalent of that for Japan. And basically, Dr. Semoto was kind of the enfant terrible of the Japanese IPO world, has been, you know, behind, I believe, 8 or 9 IPOs. So he stood behind David at that point. And we incorporated in 2014, right, as a Japanese company. As we grew, as we kind of developed the portfolio further, and under the or based on the advice from our investors in early Series A, we became an American company, right? So we flipped around. We became an American company based in Sunnyvale in California, a big office in Ann Arbor in Michigan, and now the Tokyo office will become just one of the offices in our kind of little universe. We will be opening a European subsidiary now in a month's time. One of the realities that we are facing is, one, the customers are distributed. Two, the talent is distributed, right? So we can get access to certain kind of talent in Asia, in Tokyo, certain kind of talent in Sunnyvale, Ann Arbor, Michigan area, and specifically now invest in Europe. So that is where we are these days. So really poised really well for an expansion in size and market coverage.
All right. So are you looking to add staff in Ann Arbor? Are you hiring now?
We are hiring. Don't quote me on the exact number, but I would say at least 7 or 8 engineering positions are open. In addition to that, we are looking for seasoned professionals with good track record in product management, field engineering, field application engineering, even sales, et cetera, et cetera. And we are also expanding overall, both in our automotive sales team as well as our defense and aerospace organization.
All right. So if people want more information about Trillium Secure, where do they go?
They can look us up under www.trilliumsecure.com, or they can also look us up on LinkedIn under Trillium Secure, Inc.
All right. Thanks very much, Zoran Kaler from Trillium Secure. Very interesting stuff. Want to thank you and thank all of our guests here today. Michael McInerney from Deliver My Ride, Timber Shea from Inforum's Engage program, Christina York from Spellbound. Thanks to all of our guests here today. And we'll be back next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern time with another edition of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've indeed been listening to the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.